I was just saying.
I don't care about your opinion.
I'll tell you what I think.
What's that you say?
Would you just listen?
I don't think so.
Remember, ladies, one must not get one's knickers in a twist.
Please listen.
I'm trying to help you.
Listen.
I don't think so.
Excuse me.
I don't care. I don't care.
Hey. Listen. Shut up and listen. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Shut Up and Listen, Season 2. I hope everybody has been having a really beautiful week, besides the dumpster fire that is the GOP and Trump, that deranged fuckhead. Yeah, it's been quite a week. And I don't know what to say other than things will change. And speaking of change, you know, the person that I'm about to introduce, we have never met. And I've been like a fan of your work for quite some time.
Back at you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I'm like, we need to now work together at some point. I'm very, very excited for him. So fucking incredibly excited because he's going to be going to Sundance with his new film, which is A Kid Like Jake, which is starring Claire Danes and
Octavia Spencer,
who I fucking love, and God, Jim Parsons, who also produced it, and you directed it. Everybody, Silas Howard, like an incredible filmmaker, incredible director, just all around awesome human being. That also, you have that new show with Ryan Murphy.
Yeah, I'm one of the co-executive producers, whatever that means, and I get to direct, and it's amazing. I mean, it's just such an incredible cast, and to have five women of color, trans women of color, centered. I'd be watching scenes and realize, oh, this character is not going to get killed in the next episode or be forgotten and certainly shows like Orange is the New Black and Transparent have been building us into this moment. Like, I feel so fortunate to have been involved, but it seems like now it is moving. They've started something and it's just continuing where, because to center lives is like actually the only chance for people to see each other as human.
Yes.
And we need more human connection these days, I would say.
Absolutely. And also just, the visual medium, like film, television, they're, I don't know if we're like kind of about the same age, like within like 10 years, but the lack of queer women that I saw when I was growing up, as a queer girl on Long Island in the early to mid 90s.
Yeah.
And there was sprinklings like But I'm a Cheerleader and Gia.
Gia,
which I also
was just talking about. Gia just came up out of nowhere.
Really?
Well, someone had thought someone's name was Gia, and I was like, Gia, remember Gia? And I was thinking, because she was out, she died of AIDS, right?
Yeah, she died of AIDS. She was the first female to die of AIDS.
Yes. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Actually, I said yes, but I didn't know
that. Yeah, she was the first female, at least on public record.
Right.
To die of AIDS.
Yeah.
Because I am sure that there are thousands more that those deaths were never recorded.
Yeah. Yeah, especially with women. And yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, Oh, the rabbit holes we can go down. All the many rabbit holes. But it makes me, something that you said that was so interesting, and I love that you brought up women of color, especially with your new show. And then you had mentioned Orange is the New Black. Mm-hmm. And what it made me think of is, you know, yes, Orange is the New Black had done some really incredible stuff. And at the same time, I find it very hard to work around the fact that there were no women of color in the writer's room.
Right, right. And so it's, yeah, that I think about like how each thing leads to the next, right? I'm sort of obsessed with this idea of indebted critique, which is like looking at something and building off of it without tearing it down.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because I'm old, so I have to do that more and more to make sense and to grow. And so when I think about, you know, what this show is doing, I think about Laverne on Orange is the New Black. And then I think Genji being very open about, like, hey, you don't need in the writer's room. And Jill saying, actually, no, you do need. And and that gave me an opportunity, you know. And I saw queerness on Transparent that I was like, are they really going to let this happen on TV or whatever this is on Amazon? And which also bumped up, you know, to an HBO level kind of show on streaming. And then seeing Ryan Murphy where, you know, he is also where everybody's in conversation with each other.
Yes.
He has all of this power.
Yes.
And so he reached out to a competing project, Stephen Canals.
Yeah.
And instead of killing that project, because Stephen had gone to see to all these studios and it's his and Ryan's the co-creators of the show.
Yeah.
With people like Janet Mock in the writer's room and Lady J. But Stephen was told everywhere he went, you'll never get this show made with it being set in the 80s, centered on these trans women of color and this queer world. And so it took that. So, yeah, it's that evolution of, like, here's representation in one way, and it's important. It gave a platform to someone like Laverne, who's such an activist and such a just an amazing human.
Yeah.
And then Jill pushing that further to being, you know. And so, yeah, and I'm just so aware of all of those happening because I grew up where I was like, we made everything ourselves because nobody was, there was no way they were going to put, because we weren't even the proper gay and lesbian people. We were like very queer, very, you know, we were just in-betweeners or we were butch and femme and, you know, we just didn't really fit in that well. In a very presentable way.
Yeah.
For mainstream.
No, I get that. I get that completely where you didn't fit the branding, you know, and it made me think of, I've been watching Madonna's Woman of the Year Award acceptance speech that she gave in 2016, right after Trump got elected.
Oh, wow. I don't think I heard that.
Oh, it's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And she talks about being a woman in the music industry. And she talks about how after she was so vilified in the 90s, after Erotica, the Erotica album came out and her sex book came out. Mm-hmm. And that, like Camille Paglia said, that she had, that Madonna had put women back for generations, you know, and
Paglia said that.
Yeah. And Madonna just being like, why? Because I'm a sexual being, right. You know, so if you're a feminist, you can't be sexual.
Right.
You can't be a sexual, sensual being.
Right.
And she talked about how there's this idea still, even now, regarding I want to get the quote exactly right, that women have been so conditioned to believe who they are as women by men. Mm-hmm. Like men have set the narrative for what it is to be a woman.
Right.
And that we're so conditioned to not even question that narrative Because if we dare question it, that means we're not in assimilation, which means that we could potentially wreak havoc, and we can't have that in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
You know, and getting to see now, you know, like you mentioned Jill Soloway, who I fucking love so much, who I've actually never met.
Oh, you've never met her.
I've never met her, and we've never worked together, which boggles my mind.
Yeah.
But then again, I also do believe that, like, everything happens exactly exactly when it's meant to happen.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. And, I mean, literally the fact that, like, talking about Gia.
Yeah. I know there's...
it's random.
It is random.
Like, it's chaos.
Chaos. Chaos also just came up. I was just writing an answer to Chaos as a... for going to Sundance filmmaker thing. They have every year they have a different question, and this was, how did chaos influence either the chaos of this administration? So yeah, the sort of chaos, and yeah, there's a lot.
Well, what to be said what was your answer?
Well, I'm still writing it.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, I have two levels of it, which is, one is that the chaos of the world was certainly hitting story points of ours, even though this, I don't see this film that's coming to Sundance is it's not really a queer story or trans story, although it's written and directed through a queer lens, myself and the writer, and Jim as a producer. It's really sort of looking at the world around in this relationship and sort of, you know, this paradoxical thing of, like, be unique, but paradoxically punishing difference, which is a theme that I've sort of circled around. So there's the chaos of, like, even though it's not per se, it's about someone not fitting in a box, it's about gender expansive and you know, just not fitting into a, you know, an easily checked box. So while we're doing this, there's all this, you know, administration just grabbing, you know, he's clearly just, it's just throwing things out there to for distraction, but bathroom bills and the this and that, and even our young actor is a little princess boy who's been that way forever and is in Brooklyn, where you think everything's cool, but actually got pushed back from his school because they were like, if he's going to present she, he has to go by she. And they're like, well, he's four. Right now he's okay being a boy who loves dresses and wants to wear dress. You know, anyway, again, this sort of pushback to conform one way or another. So that was one level of feeling the chaos of the world sort of fueling and touching points of the story. And then just the chaos of what the couple goes through and kind of that you, that at some time, you know, you can kind of, you could find potentially some serenity by going through the chaos, going into the chaos, as opposed to always avoiding the chaos. And so they have to go through that in their sort of way they're trying to parent and be in relationship to each other through, you know, supporting their kid or, you know, whatever they're going through. So anyway, that's where I'm at. I haven't finished writing it, but
I mean, that just makes me think of, I mean, chaos is really just another word for fear. You know, and that the only way out is through, you know, and at least for me in my experience, where either making a decision based off fear or making a decision based off love. And then also within that, there's this documentary that I had seen pretty recently on HBO. I can't forget the guy's... I can't forget. I can't remember the name of the gentleman who said it, but he talked about the difference between fear acting as a tailwind or a headwind.
Right.
And when fear gets to push you forward, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. You know, but that also makes me think that the... physiologically, excitement.
Yeah, yeah.
Excitement and fear are very, very, very similar.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and one leads you to being paralyzed, and the other leads you to,
Right, because sometimes it's just nerves, which is about being invested. And there's a mentor that I, Zachary Drucker and a bunch of us know, called Flawless Mother Sabrina, and she was in this documentary from the '60s called The Queen, and it's an early pageant ball, and she's just this amazing person who passed away just like a few months ago, but always had these amazing, you know, little quips, you know, and words of inspiration, like to Justin Vivian Bond, you know, about trying to grow outside of a smaller world, you know, and mm-hmm. like, is it okay? Like, I think for a lot of us in the DIY culture, I'm like, it's not safe out there to go into mainstream, you know, and a lot of times it isn't, but she was like, it's your job to go and just find the biggest audience that you can. That's yes. okay. That's not being showy. And her other thing was like, if you're not nervous, you're not invested. And it was kind of like, oh, I could make friends with being nerved. Yes. Nervous, because it means I give a shit. It means I care.
Yes.
When I'm not nervous, I'm usually more in trouble.
Yes.
Fear is different, but I think that they're kind of kindred spirits.
And this is like part of the reason that I love getting to do this podcast is that I get to meet individuals that are on a very similar path as me in many ways. and a big thing at for really most of 2017 into 2018 has been about me getting to embrace the power of my pleasure and the pleasure of my power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And hearing about the expansiveness and the job that you have and, you know, that fear of the mainstream, it's the illusion of the mainstream, right? Like, Cassavetes wasn't Cassavetes, you know, until somebody was like, holy fucking shit, right. Look at what you're doing. You know, like, something isn't, like, a thing doesn't become a thing until it's received and recognized by somebody else,
right.
You know? Yeah. And if I know for me in my experience, when I've taken actions because I was so, I had such a desire to be received, it became counterintuitive because that's when most people were like, no, no. Because what, like my partner Heather always says, like what you fear most plagues you, you know? So when the demand is no longer there and it's out, it's no longer mine.
Right.
Like, people are either going to receive it or they're not, you know? And I've got to trust that just the same way that I was open enough to hearing the muses, that creative energies, entities, spirits of characters, whatever the fuck you want to call it, that it's going to make its way some way, somehow.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. By following what you're passionate about first, or instead of chasing a result, is that?
Yeah, and also like, but what is the result? Is it coming from like an ego-based fear of if this happens and this is going to happen, then this is going to happen, then this is going to happen? And really putting all of your eggs in one proverbial basket, right, versus yeah. this could be a really beautiful thing and this could not work at all.
Right.
You know, but I'm going to trust in my process. I'm going to trust in my intuition, and people are either going to understand it or they're not. Mm-hmm. And that's not my job.
Right. Yeah. My friend now Bustamante, who's an amazing performance artist, has this t-shirt quote that she has on a shirt from, she did a reality show, the work of art, okay. like lasted one season. And she kind of did it, I think, as an experiment. You know, she's sort of fascinated with pop culture.
Yeah.
But one of the lines from the show was, I'm not responsible for your experience of my work. You know, that in a way, we can only do the thing that we connect to the most. And that's our job, is to connect to what we put out in the world first and foremost, which
yes.
is not an easy task. But then how it's received is out of our control.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
Yeah.
And with that, too, I think where it's if I give your opinion so much weight that it makes, and again, like, it's so fucking gray, you know, like nothing is ever black and white in the sense of there, you know, who I was as a creator and a storyteller when I was 20 is not the same creator storyteller that I am at 35,
right.
You know, because I'm always desiring to learn and I'm always desiring to grow and evolve personally, spiritually, in every single way, shape, and form, you know? So getting to receive constructive feedback, you know, where it's, this felt like a false moment, that felt like a false moment. Like, what is the truth?
Right.
You know, yeah. Because that to me is really, at the end of the day, what storytelling is.
Yeah.
It's really just getting to share the truth, not necessarily about a quote-unquote experience, but the thing that we identify with all as human beings are the feelings behind the experience,
right.
You know? So I always use this example because it's the simplest. Like, I've never been a boy of color fighting aliens on a foreign planet, you know? Like, I have no identification with that whatsoever. However, I do identify with the feeling of fear. I identify with the feeling of loneliness. I identify with the feeling of rage. I identify with the feeling of longing. You know, those are all things that I understand, that all of us really truly understand, and that at best, a filmmaker and a storyteller, if they do their jobs well, they're able to produce that magical alchemy that reaches out into an audience, whether it's in Thailand or China or fucking Chicago, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
If an audience is moved, they're moved.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, no two ways about it.
Yeah. 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 And I think that what seems to be opening up is this understanding that people with lived experiences have that anecdotal experience that connects more universal, as opposed to somebody fictionalizing that. And so bringing those voices in the room, those writers in the room, those people on the crew that have all of those, they're just in our DNA, so that's going to, you know, hopefully reach that more core truth, you know,
yeah,
through that specificity. And it seems like that's starting to break through. I'm watching friends of mine that were, you know, poets, musicians that are now creating stories in television and able to bring their voice and their experience into it. And it's really seems to be landing for, and even when Harry and I did our first film, By Hook or By Crook, we were like, I mean, we had no experience and we wanted to take risks and do weird stuff because we were like, well, if we're going to fail, it better to fail by our own standards than by pandering to something we don't understand, because we'll be lost at sea.
Yes.
And we were just like, oh my God, people are going to hate this. Like, we're not doing good PR, gay PR, you know, we're looking at mental health. We're looking at class and this way, you know, and just weirdness. We're just, you know, And friendship. We really just wanted this story about a friendship.
Yeah.
And it was such a lovely surprise to have people that didn't, you know, look like us or come from the same experience connect to it. Was such a big epiphany. It was such a great gift of that.
Because it was honest and authentic.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have Meryl Streep in a role, and if the story isn't fucking authentic and isn't fucking honest, you know, if the storyline has plot holes as big as Swiss cheese,
right?
You know, and Meryl does incredible work, and I don't even know why I'm using her as an example. I think just because she's a staple. But if you don't have something that an actor is going to be able to connect with, most certainly the audience is not going to connect with it.
Right.
You know? And also I feel like movies meet people where they are.
Yeah.
Just like people meet people where they are, you know? And really getting, I really do believe that life imitates art, not the other way around.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like we do get to be the actual creators of change in that way, you know? Like, what was the movie for you that changed you? Like, what was the movie for you that you were like, yes, this is my path?
There were a lot, actually. Yeah. There were a lot. I mean, some were, I mean, all through ages. I mean, I think when I was younger, I had, like, teenage parents. And, you know, I remember my mom taking me to the movies because I mostly grew up with my dad. And, you know, she was awesome, but she didn't always know what was appropriate for kids. So we went to see One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest when I was really young.
Yeah.
And at one point, she turned to look at me, I think when the character who was the stutterer, like, ends up ODing, and she was like, I think maybe you're too young for this. But it was, like, too late. Like, I was already in this crazy movie world and this, you know, and totally blown away by what that movie was. And then, you know, I grew up in Vermont, working class, whatever, but I worked at, like, an art house theater for a while, so I got to watch all these films.
Yeah.
And then moving to San Francisco, I got to see, like, Barbara Hammer's experimental work and Born in Flames. And then later, you know, films like Set It Off, where I was like, oh, you know, here is this incredible, you know, Queen Latifah playing this queer character. And so there were these little markers of films along the way that were, you know, showing that there were other kinds of stories that would slip through the cracks.
Yeah.
It's a very conservative world film, you know, the financing and all of that. So I felt really grateful that I also feel like a storyteller first and foremost, whether it's like I'm going to read a story, I'm going to tell a story, I'm going to be in a band. And even with film, it's like I did my feature and then I went to UCLA so I could learn the craft, and because I didn't come from money, it was a way to like buy time and build a community. Because I think of film as, for me, it's a community based act, and
yes,
I really like that part I love about it. And that even, and then when the economy crashed and I was like not connecting to anything in LA, I went to New York and sort of reconnected with my friends who were more cabaret performers and, you know, doing solo shows and made shorter works and had, you know, I might have an interview with a mentor of mine who died, and then I'm like, I need to use this, and it's, you know, it's crappily made, we're laughing, it's not, like, properly done, but it's just a story, it's like a captured moment.
Yeah.
So I felt really grateful to be able to just work with whatever I had, rather than wait for the proper financing and the proper, you know, I didn't go in a direct line by any means.
Yeah.
So, which I'm glad, because I would have been disengaged from the process and I would have lost, like, I have to make stuff.
Yeah.
So whether it's with money and in a big structure, I'm so grateful for that with the shows that I've been lucky enough to be, you know, affiliated with or work on. But also I love just making something for very little resources with my team, and we do that for each other and we kind of green light each other. And I'm just so, my big passion, because I taught for a while, is just like supporting and being around new filmmakers, new storytellers, because I just learned so much in that process.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that never goes away. Like I would even when I did Transparent season 2, I went and did a Peaches video. We had very, very little money and a million people and we're running around like crazy. Or I did another smaller project about Bambi Lake, who's this performer who's in her late 60s, and for, again, no money, but just like, just, you know, also trying to archive and you know, gather stories from the world around me that I was worried they were not going to get captured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know that you had the story about man who's married, three adopted sons.
Oh, Billy Tipton.
Yes, yeah. Billy Tipton.
Oh my God, I still want to make that.
Yeah.
If there's anybody out there with a lot of money that wants. But yeah, Billy Tipton. So yeah, he was a jazz musician, and it was after he died in 89 that it was discovered, you know, that he had been born female. And I went and met one of his sons, and I had that project at HBO with Effie Brown, that's my producer.
Oh, wow.
And we were in development for a few years, and this was like over 10 years ago, they were going to let me cast a gender nonconforming person. And yeah. We got pretty far, and we went and met his last wife.
Yeah.
And I ended up writing this solo show about it, because when we took the project back, I'm a recycler. I was just like, I need to do something with this. And but it was amazing to meet Kitty. That was his last wife. And she was a Vegas showgirl. And I met her up in Spokane, Washington. And it was like this, Effie and I drove up. And I hadn't transitioned, so I'm this butch, you know. And, you know, Effie's a black woman. And we're in this, like, very white town, small town.
Yeah.
And we pull up to Kitty's house, and it's like all these manicured lawns, except for hers, is like mini Grey Gardens, where there's all these, like, weird little sculptures in the yard and these big posters that are, like, kittens hanging from a tree, like, hang in there till Friday. And we walk in, and it's this frail kind of woman, you know, but and behind her is this velvet painting, and we walk in, and she immediately points to it, and it's a painting of a woman naked laying with her hand in a pond of water with a volcano behind it. And she goes, "That's me."
Wow.
And she was like, "The artist was in love with me." And then she goes, "And that volcano, that's me too." And I was like,
love
boom.
That.
Yeah, she was amazing. We sat for hours and talked to her, and she told all these stories, you know, and we watched videotapes, and but the whole world descended on them. I mean, I think it was really hard for the family, because it was then, like, this whole, like, barrage of reporters and people that descended on the family. But I really love that story. I still want to make that story, because it's also just about, you know, his first girlfriend was a dance marathon celebrity who divorced her husband Earl and named herself Non-Earl and took all the suits she bought him, and those were the suits she dressed Billy in. And his music partner was, you know, there's just like a lot of characters within that setting that are amazing. And yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But we ended up not making it at HBO for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
But we were able to take it back, and we almost made it through this other company. But they were a little crazy and ended up folding. And so, but it's still on my to-do list.
And is there a script that's written?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's really, really good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are so many, and that's that. There is something to be said about people that, for lack of a better term, live out loud, in the sense of they're willing to show people who they are, mm-hmm. in one way or another. I mean, we all do that to varying degrees, you know, but my mind just went to like four different places, because I was thinking, A, if I see another cis white male story about whatever the fuck, the inventor of paper, you know, like there are so many more stories, and I'm so grateful to know that there are individuals that we are the historians in one way or another, you know, and getting to give those individuals like the respect that they deserve. You know, and it also goes to show you that like no movie gets made overnight.
No, definitely not. Yeah.
And that's, I think, a big misconception in this industry is that, like, everything happens right away and happens fast and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, you can be developing something for, like, 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true.
And nothing happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it also makes me feel like I'm very excited for you, because if you're in the company of Ryan Murphy and Jill Soloway, you know, in regards to getting to have access, you know, to those that, you know, I'm going to, no, Heather, backtrack, delete. Because this is something else that, like, I've been thinking about a lot. And I was just about to say something that isn't true. I'm coming to see right in a second. We know that there was, like, a lot of talk about, like, those in power, positions mm-hmm. of power, blah, 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 and all that shit. And I know for me, for a really long time, and I use this example, like, this is, like, it's an example I use, like, because it's something that happened pretty recently within the last year, but it also, like, really woke me up. I had been invited to Chelsea Handler's house, and she was doing an event for Randy Bryce, the Iron Stash, who hopefully will be taking Paul Ryan's seat in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And I remember I went there, and I felt good, and I felt great, and blah, blah, blah. And as the evening was starting to wind down, I saw that Chelsea was sitting with, like, somebody I'd worked with, a friend of mine, and my partner, Heather. And I remember having this feeling of being so terrified to go over there mm-hmm. and to sit with them. Yeah. Even though I'm in love with one of them. I worked with another one of them, and another one I've known since I was 14 years old.
Right.
And yet, something within me was saying, you're not worthy of getting to be in that company, mm-hmm. right? And that idea of getting to be in a room that's filled with so much power, mm-hmm. right? And I woke up the next day after having had that experience, and, like, I did eventually, like, go and say hi, and then, like, left, like, shortly after. But recognizing that, oh, this can be looked at in another way, in the sense of, it's not that I have less power and they have more,
right?
Because that's not true. It's literally just getting to get comfortable with the new expansiveness of, oh, and this sounds so fucking LA, and I, like, want to gag myself with a spoon, but it's true. Like, scientifically, it's like you're vibrating at the same frequency or you're not.
Right.
And for those that are considered on the fringes and, like, as quote unquote mainstream as I've been, like with, like, Princess Diaries mm-hmm. or whatever the fuck, I've also been very much on the fringes, mm-hmm. you know, which is, like, a great thing and a thing that can suck because it's, like, yeah, we love you and, like, who you are and, like, whatever and all this shit. But it's also, like...
Yeah, it can be very...
isolating.
Yeah, yeah.
but, like, the point of that story was, like, just thinking you have as much power as Jill Soloway. And you have as much power as Ryan Murphy. Because you are in the company of those people. That... you're getting to work with them,
and they're breaking they're intentionally queerifying the power structure by curating a room where there's agency of all the, you know, the writers, Ali Liebigott and Transparent,
yeah,
and Jay, and all the talent, Trace Lissette, Alexandra Billings, like all of the voices that are brought in and sort of. And then with Ryan Murphy, Janet Mock, and Stephen Canals, and then the cast, you know, India, Dominique, there's Alexander Roth. There's just, like, amazing. Yeah. So to see people actually extend out who have been part of a power structure and have seen how fucked up it is.
Yeah.
And I think both of those really powerful showrunners
yeah.
have seen that.
Yeah.
And now are like, I want to change this.
Yes.
And so then they're bringing in, you know, curating this these rooms yeah. and these casts that are creating something new.
Yes.
And so it is, you know, for me, I am grateful of that change, because I've been a nonconformist for a long time, and I am still always in my heart gonna yeah. be that.
Yeah.
And made friends with that. Like, even at my most broke, when the economy crashed and everything went away, and I was just like painting office buildings, teaching, doing whatever, making whatever I could, like, I decided to do this. I would choose this over and over again.
Yeah.
I'm still making things I care about. I'm yeah. able to, you yeah. know, I'm still inspired, but it's hard. I mean,
fuck yes.
Poverty is grinding, and it's like, you know, it's a real thing, and feeling, you know, and power is a real thing too. And so yeah. like, but seeing people disrupt the sort of status quo of that structure in those rooms, it ripples out, you know, it extends opportunities to many of us, then we can continue to extend that out. And so, you know, and there is this value. It's like, oh, your life experience has value in this place, you know, that it didn't before, you know.
But here's the thing, and that's where I'm going to disagree with you.
Okay, go for it. I love a disagreement.
Because, of course it had value. It always had value.
No, that is true. I mean,
But again, right? It's the and that I think is more that more to what I'm trying to say, right? Mm-hmm. Where yes, on one hand, it's individuals like Jill Soloway and Ryan Murphy and Ava DuVernay mm-hmm. are providing opportunities.
Yeah.
And I feel as though, on the flip side of that, what it really is, or at least another way to reframe, is when you yourself have had the experience of not being seen mm-hmm. and not being received, mm-hmm. And that one person sees you and receives you. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yes. And then all of a sudden, you're in a more expansive room. Mm-hmm. And more opportunities are afforded. That either does one or two things. You know, it either, you're so afraid and terrified of losing that you shut down, as it were, and you mm-hmm. close that door, which I've seen again and again and again. Mm-hmm. Or you get to have that moment of, wow, yeah, yes, I am received. I am worthy. This is confirming every single thing I knew about myself, mm-hmm. everything I knew. And getting to see that then in others.
Yeah.
And then getting to say, hey,
yeah,
I see you because I see self in you. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like that's also gotten bastardized, or at least mm-hmm. taken hostage, in the sense of older white men like mm-hmm. Mr. Spielberg. Mm-hmm. That's like, I see myself in this Colin Trevor, what the fucking whatever.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Where it's like, let me give him a shot.
Yeah.
And on the other side, it's like everybody. Right. And that's the thing, it's you don't give up because you have no choice.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, I'm not gonna become a bank accountant. Right. You know, like I'm not gonna do that. I have no choice but to create. I have no choice but to do this. And so yeah, like it's not a hierarchy. In that way,
no, it is an exchange. I think it is, you know, and we're looking for equity, right? Not equality, because
yes.
if everyone gets the same apple box to stand in, all the people that had more power just have a mm-hmm. taller, you know, mm-hmm. it's more about, mm-hmm. but there is this, I think, well, for one, being seen is something that is so key. And I know that for me, it's what drove me to make work, was just to reflect back.
Yes.
And in San Francisco, you know, we all took turns being the important person in the room. We like, we found a little place, made it our stage, and just took turns. Okay, you're performing and I'm the audience. And
yes.
we sort of built our own expression in yes. that, in that world. And what I see now with people that have access to make some change is they're bringing that into the world, and the world is responding, the audience is responding, and I do feel like younger generations, they want to see stories different. They want authentic expression. They want, yes, you know, and so that thing has sort of broken open where it's like, you know, TV is busting into us, yes, rather than we're busting into TV. Like, yeah, they're understanding the value of all of these rich details of stories, and that, yes, when you actually have someone from the world, they can go to humor in dark places that's really real. They can be irreverent in ways that's tonally right.
Yes.
As opposed to fictionalized, you can't really do that if you don't know that world. It's going to feel a little stilted.
Yeah.
And so I think that richness is that, you know, exchange. It is an exchange. It's not just a one way. I'm pulling you this way.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
we're,
yeah,
pulling each other.
Exactly.
Into this new era of expression, and hopefully pushing more places for people to connect to people outside themselves, but actually feel connective, and hopefully that will really shift this polarizing sort of us and them. I feel like the whole time I've grown up, I've been told people over there hate you. People, yes, but I don't know who those people are over,
exactly,
there. Sometimes when I go over there, they're not hating me. They think I hate them. And like, I'm being very reductive, but, yes, it's like this whole thing about like those over there hate you. That's the story we've been told.
Yes,
those people over there, whoever they are, yes, in this state or this place or, yes, this, you know, and that, you know, that doesn't seem to get us anywhere to focus on that.
Yeah, and the same goes for story. Right? Where it's, there's not an audience for this.
Right.
Who's your audience? Who's your audience? Who's your audience? Who's your audience? And it's human beings.
Yeah.
Why don't we start there?
Yeah.
And maybe a rabbit for please, good measure.
Please.
You know.
Rabbit, yes.
Is that there's always going to be an audience, and people that desire to be changed,
yeah,
after 2 hours. That's the audience.
Yeah, yeah. And especially if we're allowed to have fully rendered characters that are centered, then we're not doing this sort of explaining problem that I've always sort of pushed against, which is like, if I'm explaining myself, you're not going to connect, because that's a power dynamic right there. Like, here I am, this other, and I'm just going to be about my otherness. But if I don't do that, whoever I is in that storytelling, then it might be more work on the front end, but then there's actually this chance of real connection, because it's not this divide of like, I'm other than you, I'm going to explain myself, I'm going to live only in that otherness relationship to some center character.
And can you be more specific by what you mean in regards to explaining yourself?
Yeah, it's, I felt like when, I think even with the first movie, it was like we didn't want to explain gender, and we didn't want to explain even the mental health of, mm-hmm, the one character. And they went by he and she. They went by he between each, mm-hmm, other, and she in the power dynamic world, and they were, you know. And but to not explain that took a lot of thought, you know, a lot of intention.
Yes.
But I felt like, and I sat in, because it's taught at queer classes, and so, yeah, I sat in on some classes, and I remembered one queer cinema class that I sat in on, or I was visiting, you know, and a lot of straight students were in it. And, you know, one of the young men in the class was saying, at first it was so confusing because they didn't talk about being queer or gay, or they weren't doing the things that, like,
yes,
I knew to be part of, like, a queer,
yes,
gay storyline.
Yes.
And at,
yes,
first that frustrated me. And,
yes,
then I started to let it go, and I started to think about who in my life these characters reminded me of, people in my family, friends of mine, somebody who was just a little too much or something.
Yes.
That, and so it, like, it kind of pushed past that, whereas the explaining thing always kept this voyeuristic,
yeah,
dynamic. I guess that's what I mean. And that this idea of explaining yourself is something that adults will say to kids, like, explain yourself, you know, what did you do? What did you,
yes,
do? So I think that when you center stories and there's less explaining, that, you know, people, especially now, are able to make those connections and do the math without having to be told, well, this is why, and this is how these people have relationships, or this is what they do, you know, less,
yes,
of that and more of messy, messy human connection.
Well, it's just beingness.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is. It's,
and
just
being flawed too, like,
yeah,
fucked up characters, you know.
It's a snapshot into beingness. That's,
yeah,
because we don't sit around explaining who we are pardon me, like, to each other.
Right.
You know, we're not on a continual job interview.
Right.
In that way. And on top of that, that hit something within me. And, like, my first instinct was to be incredibly judgmental and cunty. And I'm taking a step back. I've been really working on not being so judgmental and critical, because I'd you know, I'm so critical of self,
right?
And really getting to practice like love and compassion and forgiveness. But I know I definitely went through a time where there were things I did not know,
mm-hmm.
whether it was about a woman of color's experience. Mm-hmm. You know, or a Palestinian person's experience, mm-hmm. an Israeli person's experience, you know, Muslims person's experience. Like when queer first started coming into more and more focused and non-gender binary,
mm-hmm.
which definitely took some getting used to,
mm-hmm.
because I'm like, I just got finished fully remembering LGBTQ.
Right.
And now there's more letters.
Right.
Yeah. And also, like, that idea of, well, what is it to be a woman? What is it to be a man? What is it to have a gender? What, like, and it does take a lot of fucking work.
Yeah.
And it's very easy, I feel, sometimes to be lazy. And to expect somebody else to do all the heavy lifting for you.
Right.
And so, to that point, I definitely went through the experience where I would ask other people questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then realized, Heather, if you really actually want to know the answer to these things, like, do some research on your own.
Right.
Like, do that. And that's... listening to you, that's what it's making me think of in terms of not needing to explain. Where it's, if you're able to show the humanness,
right,
and just two individuals being,
yeah,
and their lives, if people are still curious later,
right,
and they desire to learn more and know more, they can do that on their own,
right.
But it's not your job as a filmmaker to do a paint by numbers,
right. And I don't think that it actually. Because they're two different things, right? Like, one is sort of learning about other things outside of our world. But when I'm talking about this explain yourself is specifically in storytelling, and I think we do end up learning, if we're looking at authentic storytelling that's just with its own integrity, we're going to feel the humanness and learn about another world.
Yes.
Without it being doled out in a way that feels artificial to the author of the story. So I think you still get this sort of knowledge of something outside of yourself, but then this human, you know, more human truth, right?
Yeah.
And I guess I just have felt for a long time with narrative film.
Yeah.
That there's a lot of these unwritten rules of like who's allowed to occupy that screen.
Mm.
And who's allowed to just be a person with hopes and dreams and who has to earn their spot.
Yeah, well, the straight white man.
Yeah, and so everyone else needs to earn their spot by being, you know, sort of otherness, or it has to be very trauma narrative, or it has to be
Well, it's the tokenism.
Yeah.
It's yes, like the LGBTQ plus gets murdered.
Right, exactly.
Or they're non-sexual, period.
Yeah.
And they... you know, are a caricature.
Yeah. No, and I remembered even with By Hook or By Crook, when, because Boys Don't Cry had happened, we were so entirely different. I mean, we're barely narrative. I mean, for us, it felt very narrative, but it was really very not so narrative and not very straightforward. But at one point, we were out of money, and we didn't know how to edit yet. We learned on the movie because we ran out of money and we ran out of editors. But there was one editor who was, like, gay, and he seemed awesome. He was really sweet, but he really wanted to kill Valentine, have Valentine die. And he knew Midnight Cowboy was a big, you know, influence, you know, in terms of, we just wanted this movie about a transformative friendship, you know, and this sort of transformative power of loss is like another obsession. And we were like, no, this is where the little weirdo doesn't die. Like, we really don't want. And he had like, so we took the movie back, but he had actually cut a version where he made it so that Valentine died. And he's like, this will allow this cathar, you know. And it was just like a real, yeah, we weren't having it. But
no, because yeah. Also there's something to be said about don't be emotionally manipulative. And don't be cheap.
Right.
You know, and don't use... nothing gets me fucking riled up more than a fucking cheap plot point.
Right. Yeah.
Like when you throw a rape.
Oh, yeah.
Or a murder. Or, like, the sassy black friend, you know, or the, like, butch lesbian police officer, or right. Whatever the fuck it is. Can like go on and on and on and on and on. And I can also understand, and this is where I feel that the beautiful thing is that most of the films that are out there now are directed by straight white men. Mm-hmm. And their biggest problem in life may have been not getting a Mercedes when they turned 16 and maybe losing their parents. But they're in their 60s now. You know, they've never actually experienced what would be deemed by somebody else to be a real hardship, right? But to them, those things were very, very hard. And being forced to recognize, oh, shit, I actually am incredibly fucking privileged, you know? And that's why I feel like in regards to storytellers and in regards to films and financing versus not getting financed, it's holding up a mirror to those that have an incredible amount of privilege. Mm-hmm. And they're then being forced to contend with, I can't identify with this because if I allow myself to get taken on this journey, that means then that I need to look at the incredible amount of quote unquote power I've been given. Hmm. And I really then need to change my narrative, and I really don't feel like doing that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like where it's, my life's hard. My life is really, really hard.
Right.
You know, yeah. And that's not to minimize anybody's pain, but again, it goes back to like every single thing that you and I have been talking about this evening, just in regards to identifying with feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Getting it on like a gut fucking level where it's like, fuck.
Right.
Yes. I felt that. Yeah. I felt that loss. I felt that pain. I felt that like, oh, my heart is being ripped out of my fucking chest and I want to fucking kill myself.
Right.
Like, ooh, I identify with that.
Right.
And
even recognizing like the circumstantial privilege, the privilege that I've had,
yeah,
and the circumstantial luck that I've had. I think I did this doc series with 7 people from the community. It was part of this MacAIDS Foundation fundraiser, and then it got picked up by Showtime, and it's this amazing group of activists and artists.
Yeah.
And all from really incredibly challenging backgrounds, and all are like activists in service. And I was like, what is it, you know, that has allowed, you know, each person to continue, not only continue, but reach out beyond themselves? And it was this recognition of privilege, any amount or gratitude or whatever it is, some sort of power that they had to recognize that, even if by standards, to most people, they were up against so many obstacles. Yeah. There's something to that. It's different than what you're saying, but it's akin to that, which is to realize, like, that it's an honor to tell stories. It's an honor to have any platform to tell it.
Yes.
It's a privilege.
Yes.
And then to you know, yeah, to try to then be as truthful as you can within that is.
And then with that, too, that you are worthy of getting to tell those stories and that you are worthy of that platform.
Right.
You know, I think that when you get to recognize the privilege, you also get to recognize the worth.
Yeah.
You know, where it's, yeah, it's a fucking huge, incredible fucking privilege to be able to tell stories.
It is.
It's
an honor and a privilege.
Biggest.
Yeah.
Like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
That we get the gift of getting to do this.
Yeah.
And those are the people that I desire to work with, the people that get it in that way,
yeah.
You know, and are able to receive the opportunity
yeah.
as it is, in the sense of I'm going to utilize this in every single way that I can
yeah.
because I know how long I've waited for it and I don't take it for granted.
Right.
And that, I think, is, like, the really huge thing. But also not feeling like, oh, my God, what do you mean? Oh, my God, I can't believe it. I'm here and I'm directing a movie. And, oh, my, no. Oh, my God, really? Oh, my God, really? I don't know.
Right.
Like, as opposed to, yeah, I am worthy of this because I know what I've done. Like, I know my worth, and I know how hard I've worked to get here. And bless you, Tagalong. Bless you. Bless you. Because I feel like when you really truly know your worth in that way, you then aren't going to be an egotistical asshat.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you realize privilege, when you don't come from a lot of privilege, you want to extend that out. I mean, with people that I've worked with who have so little, but they're immediately building a world, like they got saved by policy and health places and they became policy analysts, or yeah. they were one of the women in this doc, you know, was born in an internment camp and then became a criminal defense attorney and was like working, you know, and my friend Lewis, who's a minister, as a black trans man, and is just like, he was like, I had no idea. He's like, I became a man. My friends were like, yeah, no big deal, but a minister, what the fuck? Like, he's yeah. and he's like chain smoking, cussing,
yeah,
really just spiritually amazing, powerful. And it's all about this sort of connecting. As soon as you get somewhere, you want to foster that in others because you need it. It's not even just, I mean, service is selfish. it's a self-esteemable act where you get so much from somebody sharing their story with you. It's such a it's a privilege also to have somebody, you know, share their work and to have new stories. I mean, I just think that it's, especially right now with everything, all the narratives that are going on and all the polarizing and the hatred and the pointing to these others everywhere, to actually just be telling, you know, reaching out and supporting all the communities under attack and sort of getting our stories out and getting other people's stories out is not just, I mean, it's crucial for our survival and sanity.
And there's a lot more of us. I mean, that's the thing, because yeah. it's, we're not dead yet.
That
we're still here.
We are,
you know, and we're still telling stories despite, you know, laws, despite discrimination, despite brutality, despite all of the things, you know, the fact that I think of Cheryl Dunn's Watermelon Woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, from like 95.
Yeah.
You know, that was a seminal piece of work
yeah.
that, you know, not only dealt with the queer women, but also an interracial relationship. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? Are
and,
you
and
kidding?
Used this format, you know, innovative with format in terms of the direct, you know, the documentary within the narrative structure of it too. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The only rule is that there are no rules.
Yeah.
You know, except to really I remember I was doing a movie back in 2010, and it was like the first film that I had produced. And I'd said to the whole entire crew on the first day, I was like, listen, like, we have one primary purpose here, and that's to make the best movie possible. Like, that's it. Like, we're all here for the same fucking reason. And one night there was a freak snowstorm. We were filming in like Bumblefuck, Texas. And we had like crew that were 19 years old that had holes in their shoes. They're working in like a foot of snow. One of the executive producers. One of the actors that we had on set, she wanted to get them a bottle of wine and wanted to get them chocolate. And I'm like, yeah, okay, but I just need $150 so I can have somebody go to Walmart to get hand warmers and feet warmers and dry socks for this crew that are working 18 hours a day to help make a movie that you're producing. They wouldn't do it. Crazy. They wouldn't fucking do it. They have like millions of dollars, you know, and it's and the I feel like the old ways of producing are dying out fully, completely. And it really struck me when you had talked about the conservative nature of the film industry when it comes to people like with stupid money, like real, real, real stupid money. Mm-hmm. And I also feel, though, that's getting to change as well.
Yeah.
You know, because permission isn't being asked anymore. I don't know if it really ever has been,
right,
in the sense of, you know, when you were doing By Hook or By Crook, and that was like, what, 2002?
Yeah.
Right? You weren't getting financed by big, huge people at all.
No, not at all.
You know?
No, it was our community. And then I did another micro-budget feature with my friend Ernesto Ferranda, co-written by my friend Valerie Shore. And it was because we were at studios trying to get things made, and we had met at Sundance when I was there with By Hook or By Crook, and yeah, he was there with Better Luck Tomorrow, which he had co-written, which was Justin Lin's first film. But he was a queer punk who had a label, and he loved my band. You know, he knew Tribe A, and so we met there. And then, you know, we were back in L.A. making, you know, struggling through these studio systems. And then we were just, like, having dinner with a bunch of friends one night. And we were, like, looking through there's, like, a queer like, a punk encyclopedia.
Yeah.
And Ernest was like, we don't wait. Like, when did we become these people that wait for permission from power people? Like, you know, look, if that works for people, great. But it's nothing. It wasn't a practice I came from.
Yeah,
and I was sort of fell into it, and so we're like, let's just do this feature where it was like a very diverse cast, and that wasn't the point of it.
Yeah,
and we took a whimsical tale and we made it in 15 days plus some extended pickup shots, but yeah, with all of our people, and everyone just came in, like, pitched in, and a ton of people gave time, you know, and
yeah,
energy. But it was, again, one of those where we were like, we have to figure out a way to do that. It's on us to figure. I think I'm grateful that I came from an era where I didn't see any representation of myself. So I didn't expect anything even close. So I wasn't expecting other people to do it. So it was always like, well, you got to do it. If you want it to happen, you have to find a way. You find the people that can help you make it happen and do that, because I think that it is still an industry, and capitalism is so fucking evil, and it just pits all this competition in these mess. And narrative is dangerous. It can look so one way, but then it can flip back and sort of, you know, it's just, it's, I think it's tricky to navigate. And I think it's like when you can work in a platform that's larger and you get to tell amazing stories, that's a gift. But I'm grateful to also be able to have access to doing it on a grassroots level with a community of people and play and fail and fuck up and try some new shit and just get some different ideas out.
Yeah.
Out of my body, if nothing else.
Yeah, abso-fucking-lutely. Yeah, yeah. Like, abso-fucking-lutely. And it's you don't have to, quote-unquote, play the game. And it's a testament. Like, you're a testament to getting to show others in regards to you didn't play the game.
I didn't know really how to play the game exactly. But, yeah, so to my betterment, I think.
Well, yeah. Well,
for my storytelling, because I'm not a mainstream storyteller. It's not that I can't do it. It's just not my go-to.
But again, right? It's like, what is that definition of mainstream, right?
Right.
That idea of, yes, telling like cisgendered white male stories, like mainstream, you know, where it's all tied up in a bow and ba 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 and mass appeal and ba da 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 da. But I feel that we're kind of at the tail end of that in the sense of, the commercialization of the white male narrative is going by the wayside, which I'm so grateful for.
Yes.
And before everybody starts adding me on Twitter or the select few, you know, it's when you've had one very, very, very narrow channel of stories that are recycled again and again and again and again and again and again and again. The idea that there could be anything else,
right,
all of a sudden becomes, or the possibility that, oh no, women of color are getting to tell their stories.
Yeah.
Queer people are getting to tell their stories.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, when is it going to end? We're going to be erased completely.
Right.
You know, where it's, no, you just get to recognize that you're not the end-all, be-all.
Yeah.
That you're a part of a larger whole.
Right.
And that the room is just getting bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
To include more individuals, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and I might be the minority within the minority on this one. You know, but I really do feel, I know that art, commerce, listen, I'm all about making money as well. Like, all about fucking making money.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think there's anything fucking wrong with that. I don't think that you are either an artist or you're, you know.
No, I grew up very working class, and my dad was always trying to start these businesses and just like, but I remembered he, you know, I was like, I'm going to be an artist. And he was like, just get that money, get the fuck you money first, you know, because he just didn't want me to be held down. And, you know, it's a very, there's nothing, especially in this country, you know, the narrative in this country is if you don't have money, it's because you're not worthy. It's like the number we do on class, race and class. This country still can't talk about race and class gender.
Yeah.
Because the whole manifest destiny bullshit white power, it just is like continues to just say, you know, you have this sliver's chance of being rich and famous as long as you agree to blame yourself if it doesn't happen. That's like what capitalism tells us, you know. So you don't look at systems, you don't, you know, and it's like this crazy, because these systems are really here. They're very active, and even with this change, they're so active. And I work with youth, and I just see them be like, you know, kicked out of their homes for being LGBTQ,
yep.
and still, and they're hardworking, and they're like more together than I was, and I didn't have much, but they're like really just struggling, and so it's just yeah, I don't know where I was going with that, but
no,
it's just,
but that goes to the point of then like what is the point of having a story if you're going to keep it to yourself,
right?
You know, like what's the point of having a life? If you're not going to share said experiences of your life with others in whether it's in film, whether it's in television, whether it's one-on-one, whether it doesn't poetry, it doesn't really fucking matter.
Right.
You know, when I think of like the Me Too movement, you know, which like, yes, goes to women saying like Me Too, that, it's so incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
And then I take it one step further where that feeling of identification, where somebody is able to hear somebody else's story and say, I understand.
Yeah.
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 I get that. Like, me too. This is where I was. This is my experience. This is what happened, and this is where I am now. So you get to know that you're not alone. Yeah. You get to know that I don't know what your path is going to look like, and I don't know what it's going to be, and all I can share with you is what my journey was. And I was so grateful for those that came before me. Mm-hmm. And in those moments of struggle, because I'll tell you what, summer of 2014, no, sorry, summer of 2016, I remember I had $54 left in my bank account. $54 left, and I was like, what the fuck am I gonna do? Like, fuck me. Like, I don't buy designer handbags. I like don't like just like what the fuck? Like, holy fuck. And I didn't know who to talk to about something like that. I didn't know where to find solace. You know, and so I had to go to my books. I had to go to people that I admired, and I got to read stories, and I got to be inspired by
right.
others who had that same moment as me,
yeah,
in varying ways. Whether it was Maya Angelou, you know, Oprah Winfrey. You know, I'm trying to think of, like, those are the two women that really come to mind. I mean, Madonna even, but that's also in a very different way, because she rose, like, mm-hmm. a shot very, very, very early. But just getting to find those stories that I could hang on to.
Like that, the vulnerability, the power of that. Shared vulnerability.
Yes.
And breaking the isolation.
Yes.
And breaking the shame.
And that I can get through to the other side. That was it. I just didn't know. I didn't know if I was going to make it. I didn't know how I was going to make it. I didn't know how I was going to get to the other side. Like, and I did whatever I had to do, you know, like I started teaching myself and mm-hmm. like I did what I had to do where it was like, nope, I have no ego right now. Like, I don't fucking give a shit because I need to fucking pay rent, mm-hmm. you know? And the shame that came with the, what are other people going to think of me? Blah, 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 all the shit. Like, and then just getting like, nope, actually it doesn't matter because I don't owe an explanation to anyone right. because I know my story. And I know my story and I know where I desire to go and I know where I will end up being. And just getting to like see those signposts like Oprah in particular for me. Like she knew, she had a knowing. She didn't know, but she had a knowing,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, and if she hadn't shared her story, if she hadn't been vulnerable, if she hadn't been open with her struggles, where she had been, blah, 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 blah.
Sure, that huge of a platform. Because a lot of my mentors have, they don't have a platform of that level, but they're yeah. maybe, you know, 20, 30 years older than me. They're artists, they're working. Like in New York, it was really nice to all of a sudden be in a room where there are people 20 years younger than me, 20 years older than me, and going to, you know, and sharing a room kind of like I've done since the early 20s, like that kind of saved my ass.
Yes.
I was like, oh, these brilliant, creative people, and they're making it work, and they're artists, and their goal is to just continue to find their voice on into their 60s. And, you know, just that kind of like, it was, it was really powerful to have that idea of success there as well, with like all of the, you know, challenges and ways that you have to make it work. Because if you have decided you're going to be creative in a certain way and you're not independently wealthy and you're up against, you know, pushback in a lot of ways, you have to do a lot of spiritual quest in order to not lose your mind or feel like take it all in and just, you know, or even fall under, you know, you have to get resourceful. How do you pay those bills? How do you keep going?
Yeah, absolutely. And with that too, knowing that it's all going to be worth it.
Yeah.
And it's really that it's getting to, I really do believe, like, trust in one's knowing. Like, The Alchemist is one of my favorite books of all time. Have you read it?
I have not.
It's incredible. I will gift you that book.
Thank you.
And Paulo Coelho, he speaks about omens and following the omens and following the signs and all of this stuff. And he talks about when you're so close to getting what you want, that's when things become more difficult. Where it's, and for me, I'd always thought, maybe it's because I'm not worthy. And what I get to see now and what I get to recognize now is that the difficulty was really just like going to a creative spiritual gym, mm-hmm. as it were, in regards to, I've come this far, I'm not turning around and going home.
Yeah.
Like, nothing is going to keep me from where it is that I know that I'm going.
Right.
You know, but because at first, those obstacles seem so huge and they seem so scary.
Right.
And that they're impossible and make you feel powerless. Definitely made me feel powerless.
Yeah.
For a very, very fucking long time.
Oh, yeah.
And then I got to wake up and recognize, oh, wait, I do have just as much power. And then within that, getting to know that I'm worthy of getting to be in my power.
Yeah.
And that power is power, you know, like I'm looking at that. What is it called? I don't even fucking know. I'm such a bad lesbian. A power strip. Oh, yeah.
That is a power strip.
That is a power strip. Lesbian electronics with Heather Tuesdays at 5.
I was a dyke electrician at one point.
Were you really?
Just for a little while.
That's like, I'm like,
I got some cred.
I'm like, that's some good cred. I'm good with plumbing.
That's good. That's,
and I know how to like make something like a dimmer switch.
Oh, that's all you need.
Yeah,
that's all you need.
But like power strip, I'm like, what's that thing? You know, but looking at it, where I can stick my fingers in those sockets,
yeah,
and that electricity is going to kill me,
yeah,
or give me a bad shock, or it can power my projector. But the power hasn't changed, but how it's used.
Yeah.
Right?
No, it's very much, I mean, I think I keep circling back to this idea of like creating these rooms where we, you know, take turns being the important person. I guess that's part of that power too, is like knowing who you are, who you care, whose opinions you care about, having those people that you find in that spiritual quest while trying to stay afloat as a creative person, because we're, you know, we're creative, so we're sensitive and we're all these things, and we're not in a place that's easy to stay afloat, you know, financially, and to keep your stories and to find your footing without compromising too much, or then, you know, just all of that. I think it's just like that recognizing like who you care about, whose opinion you care about, what part of your, you know, what part of you, you know, it's that is a lot of power right there to not throw that away towards somebody that doesn't, or a system that isn't really designed to give us what we need.
Yeah, exactly. And then like thus getting to create one's own system.
Yeah.
You know, like getting to cultivate the room, the industry that will allow you to thrive.
Yeah.
As opposed to feeling as though there's only one industry and this is it.
Right.
And there's nothing else you can do about it.
F that.
Where it's, F that. like, absolutely fucking not. Because who says?
Yeah.
Who says?
Exactly.
And I'm not going to... I'll listen to you if I'm in fear-based thinking.
Yeah.
You know, but when I'm in my power and I'm in my knowing, I get to recognize that this world is infinitely expansive, you know, and that there are many industries within the industry.
Yeah.
Just like there are many universes within this universe, you know, it's a continual multiverse.
Yep.
And before we go down that rabbit hole, I'm going to
multiverse.
Yeah. Come back. And we will talk about the multiverse.
Please. String theory, multiverse, all of it.
Dude, fucking love it. I'm like looking at my, like the field.
Yeah.
Which is about quantum physics. I'm so grateful you came on.
I was really looking forward to it. When I saw the post, I was like, oh, I saw someone have been. I'm so excited to be here sitting, talking with you.
And,
I'm excited for more.
Dude, I'm so fucking excited for more. I'm so excited for you going to Sundance.
Thank you. Yes, I'm really...
Fingers crossed. Grand jury prize. Audience sell award.
The movie. Speaking of capitalism, let's sell that movie.
Sell the movie. I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm like, Sony Picture Classics.
Nice.
There you go.
Good.
There you go.
Okay, great.
I see it.
Okay, great.
And to everybody else, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. And next week, I don't know who we're going to have next week. It's going to be a surprise, as it always is. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. And see you next week. Bye.